everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the Engadget podcast. I'm managing editor Sherlyn Low, and I will address why all of this looks and sounds kind of strange in a little bit. But first, to introduce our very special guests. Joining me today, if you're watching the video version of this, on my left is Deputy Editor Nate Ingram from Engadget. Hey, Nate.
Good afternoon, Sherlyn, and everybody who's listening.
Nate's been given special permission to join us on this show this week.
It was real iffy.
Yeah, I just don't want him to be here for reasons I'll tell you later. To his left on the video is former Engadget friend Chris Velasco, who is currently the personal tech reporter at Washington Post. Is that right, Pete?
That's correct. Also, hi. Also, current friend.
No, yeah.
Like, don't. What the hell?
Former employee,
once
current
a friend, no longer friend. We don't know. This is dicey. This is up in the air. No. We will investigate.
We haven't seen each other in like a year. So,
Thank you for joining us today. And then over to my right is Julian Shikatsu from Wired. Your title is, it escapes me at the moment.
Senior reviews editor.
Yeah, but he's way more important than that.
Sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
He's a very important
person. Just take
it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And thank you for everyone who is joining us on either the audio or the visual version of this today. As you can see, if you're watching the video version of this, this is Apple granted us some time to use their space here at Apple Park. And we just took it. It's a great production space. But yeah, disclosure, they are the ones who provided the space and are sending us the footage after this. So, but yeah, we're not told to say anything.
We've
not been told what you can and can't say, which is good. So that's the disclosure I wanted to get out of the way. And if we sound much better than usual, then yeah, well, funny what you can do with good equipment.
Usually I'm just using my crappy mic at my desk at home when I join.
Yeah, as do all of us. So, okay, we're here at WWDC. We're here at Apple Park. And I'm getting the sense that a lot of people after the keynote repped just about an hour and a half ago, some people might have been underwhelmed. And that was not the take that I had, but I wanted to hear what y'all thought. So let's start with V. Chris Velasco, I will be referring to as V a lot throughout this just because that's what we used to call him.
Old habits die hard.
Yeah, it's never going away. Underwhelmed, maybe a little bit. I don't know. I sort of wanted and expected a little more meat on the Apple intelligence front. This felt like a very sort of measured, subdued approach, which I think is probably fair considering everything that's happened since they announced it last year. But I will say, and this is something I'm sure we'll get into as well, the stuff that did hit for me kind of hit big.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like big crowd pleaser stuff. It's very sort of particular dork things.
Sure.
But I'm really stoked to use at least some of this stuff fairly soon.
Yeah. I want to shout out Julian. We'll have to leave at some point halfway through the show because our meeting schedules are pretty intense here these couple of days. So Julian, we will recap for everyone everything that's been announced really quickly, but let's throw the ball to you to start with your favorite.
I think it was iPad OS. I think.
Yeah.
I think that was everyone's favorite. It got like the biggest applause.
I will offer a counter argument momentarily.
Okay, but I mean, iPad OS, obviously the big thing is that, you know, windowed apps, you can resize them, you can tile your apps. It's basically what a lot of people have been wanting in an iPad, which they've been trying to push as a computer and laptop replacement for years now. Mm-hmm. And it's never quite just been that multitasking machine. And this finally seems like there's a menu bar now, which is like, it is closer to Mac than it has ever been.
It has the stoplights for adjusting your windows, right? The bright,
that's true.
Bright yellow, green.
Oh, you call them stoplights? That's hilarious. I'm a PC person.
Yeah, they've been there for like 25 years on Mac.
Yeah, so I mean, that helps, I think, nudge this along to what they've been, you know, the touch version of a Mac, and it's getting to that point. And I think that is what, there's a lot of people that I know that use an iPad as their laptop, and I think this is going to be their biggest and favorite announcement from the show.
Nate,
that's my two cents.
Nate is the iPad person on the Engadget team, and Nate, I'm sure you agree.
I do. I think that was the most interesting thing. Although I bet what Chris was going to say.
Let's guess.
I was going to say, was that a thing of like a little bit of a Bronx cheer? Like they cheer.
What?
You never heard that phrase?
No. Start from the beginning. What is a Bronx cheer?
So like in baseball, let's say your team is like screwing up horribly and they finally do it something really basic, like catch the ball for an out, and the crowd's like, yeah, they give it a cheer, but it's like a mocking cheer for like doing the bare minimum.
Well, now I'm casting my mind back to see if that's what I and other people were doing. I don't think so.
It could have been. I mean, anyway, I don't honestly. Anyway. I don't think so either. But I was like, there was, because I mean, Craig even acknowledged it, right? He was like, we had these crazy ideas, like overlapping windows and resize buttons, and the crowd like kind of laughed along with him at that. So like, they're clearly like taking the piss a little bit about like the over the last few years, the whole rap has been like, man, look at this like M4 iPad Pro that is so powerful, but I have to stay in Final Cut if I'm exporting a video, and now you don't have to, and that's like a. It changes the game for people who like this stuff, but it's also like, well, we probably could have done this a couple of years ago, right?
Well, they like started to, right? Like one thing that is unclear to me is the exact nature of the relationship between whatever the new windowing thing is, which I don't think it has a specific name.
It doesn't.
Compared to Stage Manager, like they coexist. They are sort of intended to work together in some way. Does anyone have clarity on this yet?
I've always been confused about Stage Manager.
Me too. It's so confusing to use.
Imagine how on the, have you ever used Stage Manager on a Mac?
Yes.
I only use it on iPads.
Okay. So it does exist on a Mac where you've got like the four, you know, the four or five open things on your left. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be something like that where you can have multiple groups of apps.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And then you can switch between like those groups.
Like the Edge Bar in Galaxy Z Fold devices.
Actually, thank you for that. Actually, really helped.
But I think the problem with that is like, I think Stage Manager has always been that like power user feature that most normal people are probably not really utilizing.
Yep.
This feels like everyone's going to sort of get how to use this, right? So it's just a normal windowing.
Normal PC.
Right.
To that point, they are making it work on all iPads, including the basic one, which previously didn't support Stage Manager. So this is going to cut the mini, the base, all of them, all the recent models on Apple can use this, which is a change from Stage Manager, which was like M1 and up only.
Right.
And although I will say my only question about it is I've used Stage Manager on an 11-inch iPad Pro, and it feels tight. There's not often a lot of times where I feel like I need multiple windows on a screen that size because like it's you can't do too much there, right? So it'll be interesting. I'm actually really looking forward to trying it on a smaller screen, seeing how it feels.
Can you drag and drop between these apps?
I think so.
Okay, good. Yeah. So, but hang on. We're talking about the older features now, right? Like, I'm going to finish with Nate. I want to know your favorite iPadOS, like, updated feature. iPadOS 26 feature,
yeah,
right?
No, it's definitely, it's easily this multitasking update.
Okay, and then there were some other features that were, like, meant more for creators and that sort of thing. Can you walk us through some of it?
Yeah, I think. And admittedly, things were kind of going rapid fire there at the end. But like I was alluding to the Final Cut thing, there's background processes. So if you're working on a project in an app and it needs to do things in the background that are resource intensive, usually when you switch on their app, iPadOS would like deprioritize that or stop altogether. Mm-hmm. And now there's certain things that it will be allowed to do, like exporting a video or a song, that sort of thing. And there was also, and I'm not going to get this fully right, but there was discussion about audio inputs. And I think that previously on an iPad and on iOS, there's only one active audio input. Whereas like on the Mac, you can have a YouTube video playing while Apple Music is playing while you're recording. You wouldn't necessarily want to do this, but now it'll recognize multiple inputs. And I think the gist I'm getting is that that's going to be really important for content creation also.
V, barring the Bronx cheer aside, what were you actually reacting to when Nate was talking about
that? So the thing that I was low-key, but not actually low-key, extremely hyped for.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I think I would like to start discussing this with a question. Who is a big Spotlight person here?
Not me. Oh, God. Of course, the Mac person.
It is a power user thing, but not even really. It is. So for those who don't know, it is like sort of the classic search interface for Mac OS. It's command space bar. You start typing for stuff. The problem for me for a very long time now is that I have come to rely on Spotlight to do everything. Mm-hmm. I launch every app with it. I sort of interact with as many things as possible with it. I wonder if this is something you've started to experience more recently too, Nate. Like, after a while, the indexing gets so
messed up
bad that stuff that I know is there and I interacted with 6 hours ago no longer appears. I've had to move into apps like Raycast to kind of fill that gap, but Apple has now finally built what feels like the power user version of Spotlight that I certainly have wanted since I was like 17 years old.
What's different about it for you that makes it more power user?
The ability to have, so two things really stand out for me. One, I never remember to do the sort of like four finger swipe to show all the apps. So to be able to just like have all the apps accessible from the shortcut bar is great. Also, I'm really super stoked for the sort of like action shortcuts where you can just be like,
so cool.
SM, tell Sherlyn that I hate her.
Yep.
AR, remind me to get my backpack from Julian's car before we part ways for the night.
When you're passed out. Yeah. Julian?
I wasn't passed out. Do you use that?
I don't know. I do not. But I will say it seems significantly better than taking a screenshot every second.
Oh, gosh. No, Microsoft's approach. I was going to say, like, this Spotlight search thing reminds me of, like, I would just hit the start button and type my query and it hit or miss whether it works, right? But also,
same idea.
It also reminds me of Spotlight search on your iPhone, Spotlight search. I don't know if the name is the same. So it sounds like improvements are coming to that interface, which would make it easier to search for things on your Mac, iPad, both?
Yeah, I think pretty much everything, right? Yep. It's not just Mac, right?
Would it come to iPhone?
I don't think that iPad and iOS are getting the, like, you know, shortcut commands. Sure, that stuff is reserved for Mac, I believe, still.
Right. It's early days. We're, like I said, 2 hours out of the keynote. We still have yet to have every single briefing we have planned for this show.
We're definitely
going to
go
all
install
the details.
All the betas ASAP, though.
Exactly. The developer betas
destroy
are
our
out.
Devices.
Well, for you, anyway. Okay, so iPadOS aside, because the three of you have said, you know, you like a lot about it. And for all the details on iPadOS and what's new in iPadOS 26, go to Engadget.com. No Wired or you know, Washington Post, just Engadget.com. We've got all the details.
No, please subscribe to the Washington Post.
Yes, do. And then, you know, also support Julian, I guess.
Thank you.
Wired has been doing awesome work with the Doge stuff this year.
Truly. So, honestly, genuine credit for that.
I will take the credit for
that. Listen, this is the Engadget podcast and not a
Engadget's good, too.
Yes,
Engadget also has merit.
We're all right. Let's move on to what I think will impact more people. I think so. This is a little tight. Apple Intelligence is going to impact a lot of different types of devices across, you know, Apple's ecosystem, but I want to focus on Apple Intelligence changes coming to iOS as well as the other changes coming to iOS. So let's start with, I was super stoked for call screening, message screening for spam and stuff like that. Now, okay,
absolutely.
We have to
Why
shout.
Why are you laughing?
No, because Julie and I were just talking about this, and I'm sure this will come up, but it falls under the category of we've seen this.
Yes,
before.
Exactly. So there's a big theme this dub, as well as many other dubs and Google IOs and whatnot. Everyone's copying each other, borrowing features from each other, right? So call screening is something that Google has done historically very well with the Pixel UI, the Pixel phone, hold for me, hold assist or hold my call for me. It's so many different names. Google has also done well before Apple has even attempted a version of it. So I'm just curious to see how this will play out, Apple's version, because Apple's version is still very like voicemail based. And I'm not a fan of that because Google just has AI interrupt for you, like answer the call for you.
Well, there's like two versions of it, right? There's the one that apparently if an unknown number calls you, it'll
field
answer it.
Right. Send it straight
to
voicemail.
Let you know. And then if they think it's not a telemarketer, then it'll actually bring your phone. And then there's another version that's, you know, more chat based where they can talk to like an AI assistant or something will talk to them.
Right.
And then you can interact with them through a prompt or something like that. Yeah. I might be getting it wrong.
That would be closer to what Google offers on Pixel screening.
Right.
Call screening.
Right. But I think the main crux of it is that, you know, even, I think it's the same name, right? Call screen.
Yeah.
Google,
it's no other way.
It's pretty much a way of eliminating the robocalls. And I think everyone has been complaining about that. So this is going to be a silent feature that everyone will appreciate.
Yeah. Well, aside from these two features, which we can get into more if we feel
I think. I was going to say call screening is great, but I've kind of given up on my phone as being a useful utility.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But messages.
Yes.
If you can fix this, I will be extremely happy. But while we were in this keynote, I got multiple spam, you know, job recruiting. Oh, Bank of America, you spend $1,000
on FanDuel. I sent you that
FanDuel.
Job recruiting one, like, Nate. I just wanted to drop you a very big hint.
Oh, thank you. That's good to know. Chris, Julian, keep me in your thoughts here if anything opens up. No, I think that basically sending all unknowns to a folder is great. Although, then still the onus is on you to go check there in case you did get any actual messages. But it sounds like they are using
like a spam folder for your texts.
Yeah, but it sounds like they also are using like Apple Intelligence or something to pull out stuff like shipment updates or like I ordered a pizza and like it's on its way or whatever. So like I'll be very curious to see how that works. But like I feel like I could see like messages going the way of phones where like it's inundated. Like you look at your list and it's like crap, 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 a friend, more crap. And it's like you want it to be actually people you care about. if this goes and helps that, like that will be, I think, a killer feature this year.
I mean, I do want to point out that Google has obviously been doing this, and we know this, that for several years, and now they're at a point where they're real-time analyzing scam alerts and, you know,
during
able
the call
to like direct you to like, hey, don't do this because this sounds like a scam.
Have you tried it?
I haven't. No,
I can
call
and try
it
to spam
a pretty
you.
Good, that might work, actually.
Yeah.
But so
do it
it'll
after
be interesting
drinks tonight.
To see if Apple gets, when Apple gets to that point where they start using Apple Intelligence to actually analyze the content of the message and say, is this a scam or not?
I was going to ask for you guys who know Android a little better than me, do they have a similar messaging feature in terms of like, you know,
hiding them away?
Or just like, do they deal with spam in some regard?
I think it now deploys the same scam alert messages for messaging, and I'm pretty sure that it does. I don't know how robust it is, but that was one of the announcements at I.O. was that they are deploying scam detection for messages.
And even before that, I think there was a version that would filter out some spam and scam messages, I think, in your texts. But it's been a while since I've used a Pixel device as my like cell phone number device, so
it was also unclear to me. So I think the first sort of round of conversation around Google specifically kind of flagging a message as potentially being scammy started in March. It sort of picked up, as you mentioned, back during I.O. Have we like seen this in the wild? Like I have not used this.
Probably will be
on
until
anything.
Android 16.
Yeah, I don't know if it's tied to Android 16 or if it's just deployed already.
It was a little unclear, but yeah.
I don't know if we have embargo agreements about news coming out soon or not, so I can't say anything. But Engadget.com will have all of the news. Hey,
not the Washington Post, not Wired.
Hey, speaking of the call voicemails and like, you know, the call history and stuff like that. So yeah, phone is getting a redesign, and I heard that phone is also coming to iPad officially as an app.
Yep.
And Mac.
Yep.
So you're gonna see like your favorite contacts, of which I only have maybe one or two on the top, Alaska. And then like you have no. Ew, God.
We only talk to each other on Telegram. We migrated to Telegram, at least in part. I don't know that we migrated because of spam, but I get no spam after having moved to
Telegram. I'm getting
really?
Spam.
I get it all the time.
Yeah.
I get none.
So that's the other problem here is that like, yes, Apple and Google can do their parts, but then without the third party apps also, there's so much spam on those surfaces as well. My parents are, I sort of got one day, my parents are going to respond to a job search thing and be like, I just signed up for a ChatGPT job.
We need to get back into the job
workforce.
Market.
Oh no, they're still in there. It's more, but yeah, it has to be industry-wide. I think this is a problem that clearly all of us are resonating with. I know a lot of our readers and listeners also like really need help filtering all of this out, so one of these days hopefully we achieve it. Okay, but I was bringing up the phones app because I want to talk about some other stuff that came to light or was announced at WWDC. For example, the games app. Do you all care?
No.
No.
Dang.
I mean,
where's your Switch 2?
You know, what?
Where's your Switch 2? Did you bring it?
It's in my bag.
Oh, yeah, you know? All right.
But I mean, you know, we've seen a games app and other companies do this for years, and it's like, it's great. You know, now everything is in one place. It's nice. Yep. There's some nice quality of life features. There's some challenges now, so you can, you know, play and have leaderboards with all of your games. I'm sure there's a demographic of people that really loves that. And I am not part of it. So, yeah, I mean, good for them.
Great, also, deep throwback is that they launched Game Center in either iOS 5 or 6.
Wow.
I know, long time ago. And it was its own distinct, you know, in the past decade, it's been built into games itself. But, like, it used to be its own distinct app where you could, like, see what your friends are playing. You'd get suggestions. There'd be achievements. So, like, it's kind of circling back to that a little bit, but at a time when, like, I guess the ecosystem is more robust. I mean, what they say, like, 500 million people are playing games on the iPhone or something.
I can't
like,
remember the exact
it's,
number.
It's a it's a big number. So, yeah. Somebody, I think it's kind of one of those, like, background things that, like, could be useful, but you're not, like, gonna like, oh yeah, I need to like get into this.
I mean, it does highlight the overall, like, everyone's kind of getting into that mobile gaming space. And even they highlighted that you can use a controller with the interface and everything. So, you know, gaming handhelds a bit of a news over the weekend too. So I think that's just, you know, everyone's getting into that space, and this is Apple's variation because they can already say that, hey, we have really high quality games on phones. And this is sort of their play into that.
V, are you a big gamer?
On
iPhone?
I would, well, on iPhone, not particularly. I'm like, I will latch on to like one or two Apple Arcade titles and then like not pay attention to the rest of it. To your point about sort of this feeling like the Phoenix rising from the ashes of Game Center, like did anyone really? I mean, no. I'm sure, Julian, to your point, like I'm sure some people did find this stuff valuable, but the sort of like community construct, like the sort of infrastructure kind of built around all of that felt pretty useless to me. It never really changed. Like I put zero effort into my like Apple gamer profile, right, aside from making myself bald. But like,
gotta be honest, right?
Exactly. But also like truly the least impressive, least interesting thing that came out of today, like by far.
I think. I mean, I don't know if I could come up with others, but okay. So then what was interesting to you out of iOS and Apple Intelligence?
I mean, we hit the big stuff, right? Like, we didn't talk about the design.
Right, the Liquid Glass. Names.
Design and Live Translate.
Yeah, Live Translate is interesting to me, too.
Live Translate feels like such an interesting manifestation of Apple Intelligence across all these devices. Because, like, and Julie and I, we were talking about this before we walked in, too. Like, we come from sort of, like, very multicultural situations.
It's just true. Like
this is
being
as multicultural as it gets for me.
I know I'm really out of my element here today, guys. I would love to hear all of your thoughts on it.
Like I have a lot of friends and family who are fluent in other languages, and sometimes I'd like to engage with them better in that way. And truly, the number of times in my life when I've just like wanted to connect with someone in my family, and I just like I cannot bridge that gap. Like my knowledge of the language is just not good enough. It's honestly a little bit heartbreaking. So like I get the sort of emotional impact that can arise from having sort of seamless in the moment translation. But for how many people is that generally true? Like how often do you find yourself really kind of stepping outside of your sort of like standard local cultural situation?
So, let's hear from these two because I feel like it could be bigger than you think.
Yeah,
right?
Very likely.
Well, okay, I want to get very specific here. So you're talking about like a Filipino background, like a Tagalog is the language you're talking about, maybe like trying to speak in that you're not super fluent in.
Sure. Yeah.
And for you, Julian, what is that situation like?
Malayalam.
And are you fluent?
No.
Okay. So for me, my family were English, Chinese, Mandarin, and Mandarin and Cantonese and Hokkien speakers, and I'm fluent in all. So this doesn't present as a right. It's not a problem for me. It's not a problem for me. I don't need the live translation.
But you can totally see it.
That's why what he brings up, what V brings up about the nicheness of this is more like important here, because like you were saying that maybe me and Julian would have like add to the breadth of the problem here. I'm fluent enough that it won't be. It's not really necessary for me.
But are other people you're talking to as fluent in like English, say, or you know what I mean? I guess if you can speak all of their languages, you're kind of good to go.
Yeah. Right. So Julian, you're in that sort of like I'm kind of fluent but not enough. Is that going to help you?
I mean, the thing about these types of features is that for me, it's the demos are great. It's super polished. You try it in real life and it never ends up working anything like, because people speak fast or the thing is too slow. And
the dialect is too specific.
Or typically older who you're talking to don't understand what is going on. So they're like, wait, what is this other second voice? And so there's always this weird friction, and it's always going to be a matter of like the time it takes for people to like, oh, okay, so that's what this is.
But once you get past that initial friction, there's
always use for, and there's a reason why I think everyone harps on a lot of this translation stuff is because it is useful. Like we all need it in some way or form. And I think especially one of the new features was in messages, it'll auto translate,
which we also saw is
honestly, if anything, even more useful because everyone's on like a WhatsApp or a type of messaging app. And I could see this in the future, being adopted on those types of platforms where auto translation is sort of like an instant. Mm-hmm. And then you have everyone speaking one type of, you know, we're all talking in our own languages, but we just see a translated version. And I think that is where everything is heading.
It's a very sci-fi dream, right? Every sci-fi thing you've seen is like, oh, we've got our universal translator to avoid any sort of like language barrier, right?
So this is another thing that we saw Google already roll out on Pixel phones, the live translator built into the messages app. So it works pretty much the same way. There's a different input bar below the main input bar, and then the keyboard does the translation. So, and then it translates incoming text. Here's the thing, though. What you're saying about like that being a good solution, I see it as potentially having some challenges. For example, we know Lingo in just English alone evolves rapidly. We have Gen Z coming up with words like skibbity all the time. How are they translating skibbity to French? Bet. How are they translate? Well, maybe skibbity. Is that French enough?
I don't know, but I think skibbity is old enough. Like we've all kind of moved past it already.
Well, it's another word. I don't know, but brain rot in Mandarin, there's no equivalent right now. I could just like 脑袋痴呆 or something. It's like, what the hell?
I feel like it's very dependent on who you're talking to, right? You're not gonna, in this context of this like
drop
translation
brain rot
feature,
on your grandma.
Exactly.
Right. I don't know.
I might. Like, this is a cultural difference between us and Nate. I would and you wouldn't.
I mean, I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think live translation is a very intriguing new feature announced at WWDC. I think there's still a lot of challenges ahead before we reach that universal translator sort of situation that you brought up, Nate. But we also brought up Liquid Glass. If we feel done with the live translation conversation.
I had one more thing to say about, yeah. So this is my perspective as a not, I'm super white. but like in terms of talking about Apple intelligence more broadly, this is the kind of stuff I want to see from companies doing consumer facing AI tools.
Right.
Last year, like I was like, you know, Genmoji, like, okay, that's cute. But like, I want to see stuff where we're solving real problems. And like, this is a good example of it. And I'm blanking on some of the other Apple intelligence stuff they talked about today, but they felt more.
I mean, they did talk about Genmoji and Image Playground.
They did, sure,
it was
yeah.
embedding ChatGPT.
Well, you're right. And then there's also, so even like the notion of like the sort of workout buddy.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, that's more frivolous, but like as somebody who runs, like I kind of like the idea of like instead of it just being like mile one, pace, whatever, right. It's like, all right, you're almost, you know, just like. It sounds a little more fun.
Having tested this across other devices that already have this coaching feature, it's not great. But anyway, okay. But V, you were saying something.
No, well, we just discussed Workout Buddy, and I did want to mention I've never lost more weight. I've never been in better shape than when I was in a fitness challenge with this guy.
So, pointing at Julian. Not
but after a while, and I've come across this, I've ventured down this path with multiple people. After a while, when you just keep winning, people just stop wanting to engage with you.
Oh, so, is that what happened when I kept winning you?
You did not. That is a falsehood.
I stopped following Sherlyn because I got too many notifications.
Actually, I think I might have done that.
That's what you did. That's you did. You shut it off. I just do 3 workouts every morning.
I'm like, oh, you're not at work yet. I wonder why.
F45, dude.
I see you just did some cross training. Anyway.
But anyway, yes, I could see a little bit of value in Workout Buddy just being like the little kind of providing the moments you need to just like get across the line.
Yeah.
By the way, I saw a demo of it, and that guy is yelling. Because I know the context is like your heart is pumping and you're active, but when you're calmly sitting at a desk and they play it for you, it's just like, why are you yelling?
I don't think I like that if I'm on the treadmill either, to be honest with you.
I mean, I found it weird. The whole thing is weird because it's AI-generated voices based on Fitness Plus trainers who agreed to
share their voices,
which is... I mean, you know, I guess if they agree to it, great. Still kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the voice just doesn't, it sounds natural, but it's very clearly when you have that notion in your head that this is like a fake person, it still sounds weird.
Also,
it just feels weird.
Important technical note, I was reading about this. You have to have an iPhone with Apple Intelligence with you. So if you go for a run with just your watch, you're out of luck.
Oh, so you had to carry
you
the phone.
You have to have
with
the phone connected to your watch. I'm 99% sure.
That's
weird.
Yeah,
the watch wouldn't do the processing and generating the voice on the watch itself. So it's streaming this.
But I feel like
audio.
The whole point of the watch has become
to go free of the phone. You know, free I understand. Of the phone,
especially if you're going to run.
Yep.
Liquid Glass?
I was going to say, I'm curious about Liquid Glass on the watch and across the ecosystem. But like, what did it look like on
my
the
initial
watch?
Thing was just like, you know, this is very 2010s, which I was trying to figure out why I was thinking that. And then someone reminded me Aero theme on Windows Vista. And I was like,
so we're even back in the 2000s with that.
Yeah, that was mid 2000s. And also like I was super back into like Rain Meter back in the day and
customizing
desktop skins. And that was so popular. The glass theme was so popular back then. And I was like, this is that.
Can we describe it for our audience?
Toned down, by the way, I would say significantly.
Yeah. So for Liquid Glass, it is a new design language across all of the platforms that were discussed today, right? And it's, if you remember Windows Vista, if you can visualize that for yourself, I guess, great. But for our younger audience members who are listening, hopefully we have some younger ones. V, do you want to take a crack at describing this thing?
I hesitate to, but I'll take a whack at it because I maybe less so than everyone else at this point. Like, I have not seen it running on a device yet.
Me neither.
But it's just sort of a more, it's a glassier kind of approach to well, like, so.
it's hard, right?
It is hard.
It's describing so hard UI elements.
Because it's just like, it looks like glass. It looks like you can have app icons look like glass. You sort of see the interplay of light and
there's a lot transparent
or semi-translucent material. Like, there's a lot of intangibles in that way. That's hard for me to kind of discuss without actually really having seen it aside from photos.
I think the main thing is that it looks like when we talk about the glass, it's like the UI elements. So like a menu bar will have this glassy effect. And it's sitting on top of the content. So like, say you're in your photos library, there's all of your pictures. And on top of that, there'll be a small little slice of an oval, which is the menu bar, the UI. And that's got this kind of glassy reference. And oftentimes, as you move through the UI, it'll disappear or shrink or get out of the way and then come back as you need it. So like if you're scrolling on a web page, the web bar will minimize, but then when you need to get it back, it'll take up more space so you can interact with it.
It's this combination of look and animation, it sounds like, right? The animation is where the fluidity responsiveness comes in, and then the actual physical look of the app icons and tiles themselves, they look like your glass lenses, Nate. Like imagine transparent glasses frames and then the lenses in them. Nate's got the right shape because the two of you with your glasses are a bit rounder. You are visual liquid glass. but like, no, like imagine like an app icon, like the Photos app, right? The tile for it is basically sitting on like a spectacle lens. And that seems like the sort of shape or form of the tile. I don't know if I'm like saying it right. Anyway, y'all can take a look
at
that.
It's all very like, it's hard to put into words. But I think for me, the takeaway was like, it's not as radical of a redesign as I think people, as like the press, oops, may have hyped it up to be, right? Like it's still,
I didn't hype anything up. Well, okay.
It still looks very much like iPhone or iPad or so forth. You're not going to be like, oh my God, my phone has changed so much.
It's
like
still it's familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I guess the main theme is that now it's very much more consistent across all the operating systems, right? So your Mac could look very similar to what your iPhone looks like.
It's so interesting to me that they talked it up because I feel like in the last few years, they've done a good job of making all those, as somebody who uses them all, like, all feel pretty consistent, but, you know, that's just me.
Speaking of the other platforms, and I think Julian's going to have to leave, so what's your last thing you want people on this podcast to hear before you go? Your last words?
I would just say that there was a lot of consistent, like, catching up, it felt like a dub. I think there was a lot of AI stuff that we've seen from a lot of companies integrated into products in the past few years. And I think that's good to see here because it allows everyone to have parity in a lot of features. That's the sort of takeaway, I guess, was that it was an interesting dub. There was a lot of nice announcements, but I don't think there was that one thing that was like,
wow.
Yeah, there was no sort of shock factor, which is fine. Right. Yeah, it doesn't always have to have something like that. And, you know, maybe people are also tired about all of the AI stuff that is shoved down our throats all the time. So maybe that's fine that the meaningful AI updates here are actually more tangible, like tools that we would use in an everyday form. So, you know, but readwire.com.
Wait, okay. to put a slightly finer point on it, this is your first dub ever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Woo-hoo!
Satisfied or not satisfied?
I think
it's not over yet.
It's not. Yeah, there's there's a lot of meetings, but it's kind of nice in a way because there's less pressure to
get a hands-on.
I don't need to do a hands-on. I don't need to like touch a product and take fit photos and all this stuff. Sure. So that I think in that way it's a little more relaxed, and I get to like just chat and learn about all of this stuff and take it all in for the next few months as all the software starts to roll out. So I like it.
We have to ship you off to your meeting now. So thank you very much for joining us today, Julian. The rest of us will stay here and talk some more.
Thank you for having us. It was fun.
Okay, bye.
A very professional setup in the studio.
Cool, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
We'll take a quick...
Are we acknowledging this at all?
I think so, but they're changing
it. Do you guys do like a break?
We can.
I mean,
does the show do one?
We don't naturally do one, but we have this will be a good spot for a mid roll. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Bye. Later. See you later, Julian. Can we just continue?
Julian, I left my bag in your backseat again.
Oh my God. I'm going to go into that car though. Okay. So.
I was going to just jump on what Julian was, his parting thoughts a little bit, which was that it was like, I felt kind of disillusioned by last year's dub dub. I used to really look forward to shows like this on IO, but the last years it's been like so much AI that doesn't feel ready or useful. And that's always been a bummer because I look forward to things being like, oh, like here's like a half a dozen things that feel like, and these platforms I use every day will make my life a little easier. And it felt a little bit like a return to that this year for me personally.
So you had a good time, a good dub dub so far.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's like a whole bunch of things where I'm like, oh.
It's also Nate's first.
It's your first at Apple Park or first ever?
First at Apple. Well, first ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because to be clear, there's not, dub dub's not always been at Apple Park.
Yeah. So. No, I've been watching them for almost 20 years.
So, hey, welcome. It's nice here.
Yeah, it is nice here.
Okay. I'm going to take this point to really quickly kind of go over some of the other things that we might not have gone to so far, right? We talked a little bit about, we started with iPadOS, we went into iOS and Apple Intelligence, which I don't think we're done talking about, but we will continue to recap. I will say there was CarPlay Ultra that was talked about. I know very little about car interfaces, so I'm not going to like force myself to talk more about that unless you guys have strong feelings. There was VisionOS 26 that was discussed as well. There were some things coming, especially that Logitech Muse controller for Vision OS. I don't know how much time either of you have spent in Vision Pro, but...
No, none. Basically none.
Since I haven't put it on either. I will say it seemed like a
little better about this.
Although it's a hard thing to test.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just go and buy one to play
It's expensive.
With. But it did seem like... I spent a lot of time talking about it. It seemed like there was a fair bit of stuff that they went over.
Right.
I did like the notion of using the PlayStation VR controllers to control games, because those are widely and easily accessible. They're not super expensive. Although if you're buying a Vision Pro, you can afford to buy some good controllers for it. Mm-hmm. But like having good handheld controllers is a big part of games.
Yeah.
And games is such a key component of these kind of headsets that like, okay, I like where they're going with that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any thoughts about CarPlay Ultra, either of you?
I like CarPlay as a thing generally. Yep. It's one of those things where when I have it, usually in a rental car, I love it. And then it'll do that thing that CarPlay does when it just sort of like doesn't connect or stops working. So just like it felt like fundamentally there were sort of low level issues that kind of needed to be addressed systematically. And I don't know that we're really at that stage. Like it has progressed certainly. It has sort of become more capable. Not having tried CarPlay Ultra or any of these sort of new updates, it's hard to say kind of really what it brings to the table as far as those foundational fixes. But we're also kind of approaching a weird transition point for what feels like the future of being inside a car, right? Yeah. Like you, there's the camp of which there are many. There are car makers who will sort of lean into CarPlay. Rivian and GM are all about kind of building their own interfaces from scratch because they have control over the data. You can reach further into your systems. And then there are the people who are just like, I think Europe is pushing to just sort of really powerfully emphasize the value of physical controls in cars again. So it's like,
Buttons for everything.
It's like Europe, phone. You're it's, so good.
We don't deserve you.
No.
It's like, but we're at the point where it's like phone projection versus AI versus physical controls. One of these things is going to largely take over what the fabric, the texture of that experience is like. And I don't know what it's going to be. I hope it's buttons, but I'm not sure. So
I think that's a really good way to put it. I think CarPlay historically has been like an ideal implementation of the old style of using a car, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your GPS, your music, like all these kind of, you know, it puts the tools you use all the time on this screen where you might need some of them instead of like having your phone stuck in a thing, right? Like, and that's good. I was in Europe recently and had a car that I couldn't get CarPlay on it. And I was like, oh, this is gonna be such a pain to use like the built-in GPS to get around. Like, I just wish I could plug my phone in and because I had all these locations saved, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, Ultra, what Ultra is, and it's not new, but it's the notion of Apple software running the whole car's stack. So your speedometers and your temperature controls and all the stuff versus like one piece of it, right? Mm-hmm. And Android is doing a similar thing with, I don't know what they call it, if it's Android Auto anymore, but where the whole car is powered by Android. I don't have super strong faith in like car companies to make good software, but I also worry a little bit about your whole car being run off of Android or iOS or whatever. So,
well, I mean, there are like cars running off of pure Android like already.
Yeah.
So I think it's like,
It's kind of academic.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right, though. We'll have to see, like, what's the next advance in, like, in-car driver tech, and, like, what'll that look like?
Also, am I crazy? Isn't CarPlay Ultra in, like, one car?
It's just rolling
it's,
out.
It's
now.
In, like, an Aston
yeah,
Martin.
It's,
yes, that's
it's
right. That news did come out. Yeah, fairly recently.
Yeah, it's not really a thing yet. We'll see what happens in the next year.
So CarPlay, again, come to wingaz.com for the details. Or, yeah, I guess Washington Post will have some.
Someday they'll let me drive a car.
Someday, one day they'll let you drive.
That's my goal.
We will not let you drive ever again because you are not the safest driver that we know of.
Yeah,
but not me. Better than me. Yeah, better
because
than
I,
me.
Because I let you drive a car multiple times.
That's not true. I mean, that is true, but that is not the reason. Anyway, moving on from car things. One thing I saw talked about after the keynote from another publication or another influencer. Did y'all hear the word Siri mentioned at all on the keynote?
Only a couple times.
Okay.
Near the top.
Did it actually get name checked? So, if it was, I missed it.
Apparently Craig had said it a few times.
So at the beginning, yeah, at the beginning of the presentation, when they started talking about Apple Intelligence, you know, Craig was recapping all the stuff from last year.
So it was a recap.
Well, he was recapping, and then he said, and we're working, he basically acknowledged it was right. Like a mild level of apology of like, we're working on a next generation Siri, essentially. We decided we needed more time for it, and right. You'll hear about it in the coming year.
Right. Okay.
That's the current status of the Siri demos that we got last year. And then after that, it was only mentioned in passing, really.
If at all.
If at all. Yeah.
So Nate, walk people who are not, who are new to this situation. What's happening there?
Yeah. So last year, again, like an updated, improved Siri was one of the tentpole Apple Intelligence features they talked about, where it had better insight into what was in your apps and what you did with them. And thus it could be like kind of more proactive or more conversational. There's a whole bunch of things basically to level it up. Mm-hmm. And they showed a bunch of demos. And more recently, you know, in 2025, well, I guess it was supposed to come out later, you know, in the year. None of the Apple Intelligence stuff launched with iOS 18. We always knew it was going to come a few months later. Then their Siri is coming beyond that with kind of no real time frame. And then there was some reporting from some other publications I'm guessing Bloomberg probably got to it, but the vibe was that when they did the demos last year, it was just kind of like renders it wasn't something that was actually running. It was just like, here's what we want this to do, but it turns out it's not ready. And there's been a lot of talk about like kind of strife internally in the Siri team to get back up to speed and this sort of thing. So, you know, it's a bit of a unknown thing right now, but what we do know is that it's been a year since those features were announced. Not sure when they're going to come. And the fact that they even acknowledged that at all, I thought was sort of surprising. But I think also important to just say, like, this is a thing. It's on the roadmap. We're working on it.
Yeah. Of all the things that they acknowledged, too, there was another thing they acknowledged, that they brought back tabs to the Photos app, which was people were really upset about losing the tabs.
I thought that was so interesting because it didn't really throw me that much. Yeah. But I can see, like...
Yeah, I didn't hate that redesign at all.
I did not hate the redesign, but a lot of people did because I see it all over Reddit.
I wrote this story for the Washington Post, an August sort of very well-respected newspaper.
Oh.
And I don't... It is. But I bring it up because it was a quick just like, hey, here's how to like fix it if you really are bothered by this. And more than any other story I wrote last year, which is almost like frightening for me to say, that's the one that everyone wanted to know about. Like the level of like cross-generational like desire.
Fury, yeah.
Fury, I get, feels like such a strong word to use because it's just an app. But like,
I know,
but truly,
it was fury.
People were actually genuinely really upset by it. It still kind of blows me away.
I think it like speaks to like when an app becomes a certain level of importance to people, that changing it can be a really like startling thing.
How much time do either of you spend on your Photos app?
A fair few moments, throughout the day.
Okay, so I'm on it like hours at a time sometimes.
She's going through the selfie folder.
I was going to say, looking at photos of herself.
I'd like to note that the first photo that was in our live blog today was one of Sherlyn.
God.
Just, are you shocked?
It was the one you took for me.
This is your fault,
I have not worked at Engadget for
a bit.
Four years now.
Yeah, congratulations.
And man, Nothing that changed. Has not changed at all.
Yeah, well, anyway. part of the reason I think that Apple redesigned the Photos app last year, because when I talked to them deeply about this, was that they wanted to make it easier for people to find the pictures that they were looking for when they go into it. And that's why they
created this method of a huge scroll.
Right, constantly scrolling, which is what you were reduced to before the redesign. Now you can filter out screenshots, you can like organize things into collections. I really enjoy that approach. I think giving these customization tools to the user really puts it back in their hands. But it turns out people don't want to be doing the customization. They just want to be finding their things and seeing their tabs. They don't like change.
I just had a really dumb idea, is like sometimes you go to a website or an app and it'll be like, here's what's new. And there's little things that pop up that guide you through the interface. And it's like,
right. They do that. Sometimes Apple, like little, like what's like new in photos.
Little chips. And I was like, wouldn't that help somebody? Like, hey, your camera roll is still right here, guys. Like, I don't know.
In theory, I find those so irritating, though.
Yeah, but that's because you know what you're doing. Well, I don't. Zoom anything. Well, so, yeah, like, you don't. That's
so there are many apps. So like one that I run into or use relatively frequently that does this all the time. It drives me nuts. It's Insta360.
Yeah.
Every time there's an app update, you have to go through 15 tooltips.
Oh.
And I'm just like, the first time it's like, oh. Genuinely, thank you very much, because I would not have figured this out. And then the third time it happens, you're like, I cannot hit the buttons fast enough to just get rid of the thing.
There's a tips app. That's where it should be. Yeah. You're right.
It is
fair
there.
Enough. Yep.
I will say
and in
this.
In theory, you can also ask the existing version of Siri how to do some things.
That's true.
You should suppose to be able to.
Yeah, you can.
It's not great.
Philosophically, I think this is similar to what's going on with Google Search, which is that maybe people don't mind scrolling endlessly, clicking page 2, 3, 4 to find the right answer for them. And they don't want AI overviews to answer the question for them. Like, I'm not going to the Photos app and typing the search with natural language, which is the Apple Intelligence update. Find me pictures that have balloons in them in Greece or something, which none... That's not
I use
in my
like
photo
basic
album.
Level searches. Though.
Yeah, the basic searches where I'm like a bank name or something or a credit card number, that sort of thing. I type into the search, but not. I'm not trying to ask my Photos app like I would ask a friend. I'm not like, if you find me that selfie with me in the red and white striped dress, no. I'm not trying to do that to Siri either, so I don't know why.
Thank God.
Well, maybe I do. I don't know. Maybe it's just I'm out of touch with how people use their phones and their Photos app, but I enjoy that scrolling process because as I'm scrolling, it reminds me of some other events in my life that I forgot to talk about or reflect on.
Well, a few years ago, they did an update to the Photos app where it would show you all your, it would show like the day view and then a month view. And
that's what they
view.
Replaced.
That
yeah.
stuff, and that's, it's still there.
You still have
but
that,
it was less, it was less apparent, but that's the thing that I find really valuable. Is like, I like seeing the little like day, you know, like, here's a scattering of things from
they
the day.
Still have
you can
that.
Dip into that.
When
more.
You swipe right on the grid, you get that. Or left?
It's there. Yeah. It's there. Yeah. Anyway.
Speaking of sort of, you know, uncovering things
in
the photographic experience, what I'm curious to see if y'all have heart like feelings one way or another about the camera app redesign.
Ooh, good question.
Did it?
That is a big one.
So as part of the part of the Liquid Glass update, one of the knocks against the stock Apple camera app for a long time has just been there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of potential. There's a lot of capability, but like finding just the right thing at the right time has honestly been a pain in the ass. And Apple has now finally taken that into consideration and tried to streamline the camera app such that if you have to change your frame rate or something when you're shooting video, like that stuff shouldn't be more than like one or two taps or swipes away from whatever the stock, like the default kind of look is. Mm-hmm. I don't have, it's one of those things where I think I will probably find it extremely irritating at first until you kind of get used to it. But I think it does sort of speak to the opportunity Apple had with Liquid Glass just to say, like, we don't always know what is right. We're going to try some things.
Right.
Some people, as we've seen with photos, people will hate it. But this was an opportunity to kind of really go back to the drawing board and rethink how some things should work. And it's just always interesting and... To some degree, to me, gratifying to see that process happen because it's an acknowledgement that like, you know, just because something has been this way for X number of years, that's no reason it has to continue this way. Like, I do just appreciate when that happens.
That's a great way to put it.
I must have missed it because I was busy doing something else in Slack. However, I will say the mentioning camera reminds me there was also like some small updates coming to visual intelligence. So you can now.
I'd say more than small, actually.
Actually, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. All right.
for once. instead of, you know, having to use the camera control button for, you know, it was announced pre-WWDC that you can use more than just the camera control feature. You can also use action button, I believe, and one other way to access visual intelligence on your phone. But now you can also use it on screenshots, and there's better, I think, ChatGPT integration. And ChatGPT is also integrated into more services across Apple Intelligence. So, like I said before, Image Playground is one place that's getting better slash more ChatGPT support. I just think visual intelligence is, it has launched in a fairly limited way, along with a lot of the other Apple Intelligence updates. And like to see it slowly grow, I talked to Apple about this earlier, or like was talking to people about it. Like, I think, yes, we mock or make fun or tease Apple a little bit for like catching up slowly to the Googles and the Microsofts of the world with their approach to things. But I think that we've said this before, Apple does it in a different, I hesitate to say more careful, but it feels a bit more careful. Yeah, deliberate. It's a bit slow. Deliberate is a good way to put it. So it's like, instead of giving you, here's Gemini, blah, 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 do everything you want with it, and then, whoops, sorry, we were screenshotting your entire history the whole time. Sorry, that was Copilot and Recall. Yep. But like, instead of doing that, they're like, oh, we're going to give you a limited set of features to work with first, and as you get used to it, we will broaden the set of features. Like, I think that has been the approach I'm seeing.
Yeah, and that's kind of been their approach all along.
Exactly.
For a long time. So, like, yeah. I don't think there's any surprise. Like, I think
it's not surprising.
No, but I think, you know, you'll compare it to, like you said, like the Gemini viewpoint, where it's like, oh, like, you know, I/O was hard to keep up with for a number of reasons this right. year. Just like so much stuff happening.
From right? One of the reasons is that, one yeah, of the sure. reasons.
Yeah, but yeah, then this is a little more like self, like I think I remember like last year, like there was like very, it was like writing tools and Genmoji and right. like they were very deliberate. Here are like four or five things, and obviously there's more, but like there's these high level categories. Visual intelligence, I mean, like doing it with screenshots seems really smart, because like how often are you like on a page like, oh, I'd like to know more about this it, thing
all
you,
the time
you screenshot it to save until it got later, but now you screenshot it and you can like, yeah, ask ChatGPT about it, or like make a calendar invite out of like a flyer for a yeah. show or something. Like, I don't know, that again, that's another Apple Intelligence thing where it feels like it's, I can see the use case being useful for normal people, and they don't even need to think about what's doing it.
Yeah. How much do you, either of you trust Apple with your data?
More than most. I don't trust anyone. I mean, my this is not a helpful thing to say, but I am a privacy nihilist.
Me too.
I've been agreeing to terms of service yep. when I was 14, didn't even come close to so like I my data is anyone's and everyone's at this point.
You just opened up yourself to a world of,
if you want to go hack somebody.
Like, it's been, I've been open. Like, yeah, so many of us have just, like, it's so easy to get caught up in this data breach and that hack. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't, frankly, take a whole lot for people to just wash their hands and say, it's
the cat's out of the bag.
The die has been cast. Like, right. whatever happens is going to happen. Anyway, I'm sure you asked that for a reason. Not
no, I'm just curious. I'm just curious. How about you, Nate? I mean, like, compared to the likes of Google and Microsoft.
Oh, how much do I trust him? Again, I'd say more than most.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as much of a nihilist as Chris. Like, it took me a while to, like, understand conceptually, like, how to use a password manager, which sounds silly. But, like, now that I get that, I'm, like, all good with, like, having ridiculously long, complicated passwords. And I try to two-factor everything. I still don't really understand what a passkey is, even though I use them. but, like, so I'd say, yeah, in terms of, like, my data, like, I'm not super concerned about it, but partially that's because, like, if somebody really wants to get it, they're just going to get it. So I guess that's, like, where the nihilism comes in, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
We do our best, but also, you know.
Okay, we have a few minutes left. I want to do closing thoughts, and then I want us to be able to, like, shoot the crap. So, V, what was your, like, main takeaway? Maybe something we haven't talked about yet, like audio, the AirPods updates.
And I mean, if we're talking main takeaway, yeah. for me, it's very much, again, there are a lot of scattered little bits that I really enjoyed.
Right.
But I still like this. This has felt like such an interesting shift from last WWDC, where Apple kind of lays out the grand Apple Intelligence vision, kind of says some things that did not immediately come to pass, which has led to some immediately bad situation. Like, right. Apple is facing two class action lawsuits, one in the United States, one in Canada, over kind of misleading marketing claims related to Apple Intelligence. Like, I was hoping for a little more acknowledgement of that. And basically,
some.
The extent that we got was, hey, yeah, Siri's not done yet. Like, we're working on it. Like, some sort of sense of, you know, like, we could have done this better. We should have done this better. Like, I think a lot of people have gravitated towards Apple as a company over the years because it has sort of centered itself around the idea of, you know, like, we're humans making nice things for humans. Like, we should be able to kind of, like, stand up for the right thing when it reveals itself. And I feel like this is an opportunity where Apple maybe could have been a little more pointed in sort of addressing the situation and everything that's kind of stemmed from it. And we didn't really see that.
Nate, what about you? Main takeaway or big, like, feature that we still haven't talked about? I mean, we haven't really talked about Mac OS, but, you know.
There wasn't as much, I think, on the Mac. But although, again, I mean,
Spotlight forever.
Spotlight, yes.
Okay, true, but we did talk about Spotlight.
Yeah. So. And also, like, again, it's at this point, so much of what comes to one comes to all of them that, like, you know, like I said, like, new phone apps, Spotlight, there's, like, it's all very unified at this point where, like, and they even sat and said, like, oh, like, when they got to the iPad, like, all the stuff we talked about on iPhone will be here, plus these other specific things. So, you know, that's one thing. But, yeah, my main takeaway is, like I said, I'm looking for those quality of life things where I'm like, these are 5 or 6 or 10 features that, like, Spotlight is something I will probably end up using every day. Mm. Improved iPad situation I'll use constantly. You know, there's some of these iPhone features. I don't know if there's anything I'd use every day, like a redesigned messages app. Like, again, like, most important
the group
app.
Chats updates.
Right. Yeah. Like, so there's lots of stuff like that. And I think a broad problem I have when you talk about events like this is that we're talking about a lot of platforms that are very, very mature at this point, both here and, you know, we're talking about Google, talking about Microsoft. Like, we're out of this time when every year is going to feel like this sort of, like, groundbreaking wow factor sort of situation.
Exactly.
You know, like, there's been, you know, the iPhone is getting close to 2 decades old. Mm-hmm. Like, think about that for a minute. Like,
it's almost as old as me.
Oh my God, almost. So, you know, like, there's just, I think there's, like, a weird set of expectations where people expect there to be a one more thing every year or two that, like, blows your mind. And
what was the rumor for this year? Like a HomePod with a screen would be, like, the
that was your bet on the rumor. That's meant no more things, no more at the end of the
game. Yeah, you're right. No, that's been a rumor for a while. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think everyone's waiting for, like, the next technological shift forward, and there's, like, all this, like, oh, AI is going to be it. We'll see. But in the meantime, you know, you kind of just, like, keeping on tweaking things, refining it, making it a little better. And, like, that's not a bad thing. And you also got to remember, I always say about these events is they aren't really meant for consumers. Yeah. They're meant to show developers what they can do to build stuff for consumers to use in the coming year. So, and, you know, again, I think Apples are more friendly to normal people than, like, a build, obviously. So that, like, again, leads to this kind of, like, expectation that you're gonna be like, oh, like, I'm gonna go and buy this, or, like, what's this thing for me? And, like, we're not there yet. That's what the fall is for.
Yeah. So I would like to address basically the same thing that Nate did, right? This is a worldwide developer conference, WWDC. And so developers are the main audience for this, even though, you know, Apple does package it to be very friendly to the average consumer as well. It was very entertaining to watch.
And also they ask all the media to come.
Right, so. Exactly. And it's very entertaining to watch all of the bits, and we can get into that if we want. But I want to close with saying that, like both Chris and Nate have pointed out that we felt like it's kind of scattered in terms of there's a lot of little bits of news coming to all different product ecosystems. There didn't seem to be a huge overarching theme, even though I guess the invite had a tagline that was like sleek peak.
Well, glass is the
and
thing,
that
right?
Was the glass. It was the liquid glass thing. So I guess that's the biggest change you're going to see coming to your phones. It's really hard to understand what consumers are going to find most impactful in their daily lives, and for us as well. We're going to spend some time digging into some of these features in the upcoming weeks and months, and then I think we can properly dig into a lot of these things in September or whenever they do the iPhone event launch.
Come to Engadget to see more.
And I was going to say, but if it feels like this hour of talking has been a bit scattered, you can
go read
everything announced at WWDC 2025 on Engadget.com. And I guess you can go to Washington Post for some of your news from Chris Velasco. Where can people find you online?
Hey, you can now. I'm now a creator, y'all. This is my thing.
No.
Yeah, please follow on Instagram and TikTok, your pal Velasco.
Oh, that's such a nice handle.
Or Salad Boys.
With
salad?
with four Z's. Oh, you don't know about Salad Boys.
SaladBoizZZZZ.
We're going to get into this.
Salad Boys was an invention for Sherlyn's benefit, but
did become
a mainstay of Apple events.
And because Julian and Chris Velasco are the co-creators of Salad Boys, and they did it on a day I was finding out that I got broken up with.
Oh, wow. I did not expect us to talk about this. I'm happy to talk about it.
This is the Engadget podcast.
How did Salad Boys not come up earlier when Julian was with us?
Well, because we're professionals.
We had a time crunch. And also, yes, this is the shoot the crap session or section. Nate can be found online at Engadget.com, but where else?
I occasionally use Threads and Blue Sky at Nate Ingram.
You more than occasionally are on Threads. You are out there in people's replies.
I like to reply to people and like stir the pot about.
Could we call you a reply guy?
No, because it's not to ladies specific. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? The reply guys are like up in ladies' comments. No, I like to reply to people who are saying horrible things and tell them how horrible they are.
I see it. I stand up. I see you standing up for people.
I just get mad so often.
You really do, but in a nice way. Yeah, I am on Engadget.com. I am also on Threads. Shirlinstagram, Chrlinnstagram. Thank you for listening to
Wait, let's pause. Your Threads handle is Shirlinstagram?
Yes, because you copy over your Instagram.
I know,
account.
But it's unfortunate.
It's like you don't work in tech. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher. We have a full-ass outro, can I swear? It is the Engadget podcast. I can swear. We're going to stitch it together, the outro into the episode. But yeah, please subscribe and like and follow and everything that you can. And then I like therapy. I might launch my own therapy podcast if we're going to do.
You've been talking about this for years.
About the podcast?
About my Therapy podcast.
Therapy?
Yeah. Did we record a pilot?
We did record an episode. Years ago, me and Chris Velasco recorded a pilot that I never released.
I would love to hear this.
The unreleased.
I was in a bad way, I think, when we did that.
We really were. So anyway,
I mean, you did it. You recorded a podcast, so you must have been in a bad way.
Shut up.
That's why I'm here today.
Yep.
Fired. Okay. Thank you for joining us, both of you. And
thank you, Chris.
And thank you to Apple for setting up everything. Thank you, Apple. And yeah, I guess we will see you all soon. And come to Engadget.com.